It's Monday, January 11th. Joe Biden is set to become the 46th president unless Mike Pence makes him the 47th. We start here. President Trump will be gone on Inauguration Day. Well, congressional Democrats now say we can't wait that long.
We must have accountability because without it, it will happen again.
What's possible might have just changed in a matter of days. We'll preview a potentially unprecedented week in Washington. Meanwhile, he's already lost one of his favorite parts of the job.
Twitter specifically highlighted some tweets the president had sent.
Why social media companies chose to silence a sitting president. And if you thought you could break into the Capitol, then tweet about it.
One of the most photographed crime scenes in the history of crime.
What happens when the consequences of a riot follow you home? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. During the course of his re-election campaign, President Trump campaigned on lots of different things. That's just the nature of the presidency. One was what he called law and order, respect for police officers, trust that justice will prevail without violence.
Because the only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged. Remember that. It's the only way we're going to lose this election. So we have to be very careful.
He also campaigned on this idea that there is a deep state, a group of people in the government, Republicans and Democrats, bent on keeping him from winning the election. After months of claiming this, there's still no proof of it or even real evidence. But these people, he said, they need to be overcome, overwhelmed. Well, last Wednesday, we saw which of these ideas was more important to the crowd outside the Capitol, the crowd that Trump later praised. Probably seen pictures of people wrenching the gates from police officers' hands.
They broke the glass.
You've seen them breaking property, ransacking offices. That is scary, but it still belies how truly violent this invasion was.
Let's burn this down.
As ABC News verified photos and videos throughout the weekend, we saw people coming at police with hammers.
They got mad at everything.
Swinging at the hands that were clutching those barricades. Swinging them at shields guarding a doorway. We saw protesters spraying chemicals into the faces of police, then lowering their shoulders and bowling them over. With one bloodied officer caught in a doorway, rioters shoved as hard as they could, essentially crushing him. Meanwhile, outside, members of the crowd got a police officer down on the ground. A man grabs him by the helmet and drags him down some stairs.
Yeah, they're beating the
men around them are using sticks, batons, and even an American flag to beat the cops defending the Capitol. This was an event in which dozens of police were injured and one was killed. The day after this, ABC News and Ipsos put out a poll asking Americans what they thought now about President Trump.
This morning, an ABC News Ipsos poll suggests that two-thirds of Americans hold Trump responsible for the assault on the Capitol, while a slim majority, 56%, believe Trump should be removed from office before his term runs out on January 20th.
As of this morning, a majority of Americans now support removing President Trump from office. That is higher than most polls during the president's first impeachment trial. However, if you think Americans are all on the same page here, this same poll over the weekend found one out of three Americans still believe that Joe Biden's election was not legitimate. President Trump has 9 days left in his term, but no one really knows what this is about to look like. So let's start the day with ABC's Karen Travers, who works the White House beat, and ABC News legal analyst Kate Shaw. Karen, there have been questions as to whether lawmakers would actually try to remove President Trump from office. Well, all of a sudden, the answer from Nancy Pelosi seems to be, yeah.
Yes, Brad, and they're moving really fast toward a possible second impeachment of President Trump. This has never happened in U.S. history. No president has been impeached twice.
A very dangerous person who should not continue in office. This is urgent. This is emergency of the highest magnitude.
Last night, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told her Democrats that the House today will move forward on a measure that's calling on Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove President Trump from office.
If the Vice President and the Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment. That is the overwhelming sentiment of my caucus.
She's giving him an ultimatum. Pelosi says they're going to give Pence 24 hours, and if he doesn't act, Democrats are going to move forward with impeachment. So what does that mean? They're going to introduce an impeachment resolution that's just a single article of impeachment.
Over 190 members of Congress have now sponsored an impeachment resolution that concludes Donald John Trump engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors by willfully inciting violence against the government of the United States.
And Brad, there's about 200 lawmakers that right now are signed on to that resolution. They're all Democrats. There's no Republican yet that has publicly signed on to it, even as we're hearing rumblings that some Republicans are so angry with the president that perhaps they could consider supporting this.
And after this, we're going to walk down and I'll be there with you.
This resolution charges the president with incitement of insurrection. It's essentially accusing him of inciting violence against the government with the comments that he made at that rally last Wednesday.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
Brad, the Democratic resolution says that those comments from the president encouraged and forcibly resulted in imminent lawless action at the Capitol.
Well, I mean, assuming the vice president does not go forward with that, does not get the cabinet members needed for the 25th Amendment, Kate Shaw, you need 218 congressional members to impeach a president, right? You need a majority of the House. Then it goes to the Senate. You need like two-thirds of them. Is an impeachment of a sitting president possible when there's 9 days left?
Well, a couple of things, Brad. One, I think it's almost certain that if Pelosi brings this article to the floor, that it will absolutely pass and pass easily. So I think you're right. The real question lies with the Senate. So right now, the Senate isn't scheduled to even come back into session until January 19th, the day before inauguration. But we should say that's within the Senate's control. They could decide to come back early if they deemed it sufficiently important. So right now, I think the calendar is less the obstacle than the political will to return and to consider this article of impeachment.
Well, I think the country is the right way to hold presidents accountable. The president should be very careful over the next 10 days.
I honestly don't think impeachment's the smart move because I think it victimizes Donald Trump again. And I think
stand down. This will destroy the country even further.
Could it get to two-thirds of the Senate, right? 67 votes are required to convict and then remove the president. And I don't know, you know, for what it's worth, Brad, it seems to me that this is a story that gets worse for the president with every passing day.
They're ruthless. And it's time that somebody did something about it. And Mike Pence, I hope you're going to stand up for the good of our Constitution and for the good of our country. And if you're not, I'm going to be very disappointed in you. I will tell you right now. I'm not hearing good stories.
As we learn more of just how dangerous and harrowing the scene inside the Capitol was, you know, and how close to unbelievable tragedy in terms of, you know, actual injury to or death of members of Congress. You know, all of that was actually possible, it seems.
Images emerging of some with zip ties in the Senate chamber where Vice President Mike Pence was presiding. The crowd chanting, hang Mike Pence.
You know, I don't know. I think 67 is a high number, and it's by design a high number, but it doesn't seem impossible to me.
Well, then I guess I'm wondering, though, like, what's the point, right? Like, so great. What if you removed him on the 19th? What, that saves you a day of it? Like, why?
Yeah, I think we should say that some members of Congress may feel like there's a moral imperative to repudiate this conduct, right, this incitement of insurrection. But I also think there's a more concrete reason to potentially pursue impeachment, and that might even include pursuing it after January 20th if it's not possible to do it before the 20th. And that's because impeachment carries two possible consequences if you can get a conviction. One is removal from office, and of course, after January 20th, the inauguration of Joe Biden will have done that. But the other is disqualification from holding future federal public office. And so there's the view is that even if an impeachment trial happened after the 20th and, you know, you could get 67 members of the Senate to agree, then you could disqualify Trump from seeking the Republican nomination in 2024.
And you can do that after January 20th still?
So it's never been tested, Brad, with a president. There was one post-departure impeachment of a cabinet secretary in the 19th century. So the view is actually that, yes, you can do it after the end of a term in office. But of course, with a president, it's never been tested.
Karen, is the president actually going to, this also speaks to my question of like, why would you want to, is the president going to do anything else in his next 9 days in office? Or is it essentially, is this just, we're all just talking about Wednesday. That's he deserves punishment. That's why they're doing this.
Brad, the White House is planning to go ahead this week as if it's business as usual. Officials tell us that this week he's going to be out and about. He's traveling to Texas to tour the southern border and talk about security there and the border wall. And he's going to do a series of events that they say is aimed at highlighting his record and what they think are his accomplishments. You know, but Brad, one of the big things that you're hearing from lawmakers and, you know, officials in Washington is that 9 days is a lot of time.
Perhaps my colleagues weren't in that room. Perhaps my colleagues were not fully present for the events on Wednesday. But we came close to half of the House nearly dying.
You know, you could say, oh, well, he only has 9 days left to be president. But 9 days, a lot can happen.
If a foreign head of state, if another head of state came in and ordered an attack on the United States Congress, would we say that that should not be prosecuted? Would we say that there should be absolutely no response to that? No. It is an act of insurrection. It's an act of hostility. And we must have accountability because without it, it will happen again.
We do know one thing, Brad, and this might maybe bring down the temperature a little bit next week. The president announced last Friday he is not going to Joe Biden's inauguration.
I was told that on the way up here, way over here, that he indicated he wasn't going to show up at the inauguration, one of the few things he and I have ever agreed on.
We're told that the president's not expected to even be in Washington, certainly not at the White House, before the inauguration. So he might be out of town, and maybe that brings things down just a little bit.
Yeah, it was like considered super like rude when he said he wanted. Now a lot of lawmakers are like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, sigh of relief, absolutely.
Right, exactly. Kate, are there other potential, we talked about impeachment, but are there other potential consequences for Trump out there? Like, we've seen people argue he could be complicit in the riots themselves. Can you get arrested for making people mad?
You know, so the question of whether he could face any kind of federal criminal charges after he leaves office, I think, is a hard one. I do think that there are absolutely cases that could be made for things like incitement of insurrection, seditious conspiracy. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility that the Biden Justice Department will take a look at whether there's potential criminal charges that could be brought against then ex-President Trump. Because remember, DOJ thinks you can't indict a sitting president, but you can certainly indict an ex-president.
Certainly will be more pardons. I'm told to expect a lot of them. I am told that he almost certainly will include a pardon of himself. Also,
that's, I think, a possibility, and why I think there are active conversations about a self-pardon. That's never been tested, and no president has ever tried it. But I wouldn't at all be surprised to see Trump attempt to pardon himself on the way out the door. And we should say, we don't know that that would shield him from federal criminal exposure, because the Justice Department might say, we don't think that's valid. We're going to charge you anyway. I mean, one other thing I'll say is that there's a somewhat obscure provision of the 14th Amendment that has been getting some attention just in the last couple of days. And that's Section 3, which basically says that anyone who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States cannot hold federal office. And there's another provision in the 14th Amendment that says Congress can enforce the provisions of the 14th Amendment. So there is an argument that Congress could actually pass a law under Section 5, basically disqualifying Trump from holding office again under Section 3, based on his having incited insurrection. Now, Congress would have to make the findings that he had done so. But if this was a legal strategy that they decided to try and it succeeded, it would mean they wouldn't need the 67 votes in the Senate. You know, this would be passed like ordinary legislation, and presumably ordinary legislation under a President Biden, who I think would be unlikely to object to it. So I think there are a number of possible avenues for consequences beyond just, you know, the impeachment that I think we're going to be hearing a lot about this week.
Last question. I keep asking about the next 10 days for President Trump. What about the next few weeks or months or years for the GOP? Like, if you just said our president should be removed from office and you're a Republican, does that mean you're betting on a Republican party that just doesn't like President Trump anymore? Because that seems like a tall ask.
To me, there's not a whole lot of question here. So, you know.
So you think it was an impeachable offense?
I've said before, Jordan. Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think it's been striking to see how much anger there has been among Republican lawmakers.
This was a tragic day for the country, and the president had involvement in that.
But I think right now, the sense right now, you know, today, is that the brand is very toxic and that this is a very bad way to go out of office.
All I can say
is count me out. Enough is enough.
But, you know, memories tend to be pretty short. And the president, as he likes to say often, has 75 million Americans that were behind him back in November.
Lindsey Graham, you are a traitor to the country. You know it was rigged. You know it was rigged.
You can say you're distancing yourself from him and his brand and his controversy. Right. But how do you do that and still stay okay with the tens of millions of Americans who still like the president?
It's going to be like this.
Yeah, and I'm old enough to remember a time when, like, no establishment Republicans wanted to have anything to do with this guy named Donald Trump. Well, that all changed very, very quickly. We'll see how it could change again. Karen Travers, Kate Shaw, thank you both.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, we'll be monitoring Twitter for President Trump's response. Oh, wait, no, we won't. The sound of social media silence after the break.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked Friday about the president's social media accounts getting these little mini bans. Twitter and Facebook, appalled by the violence they were watching, revoked the president's ability to post for 12 to 24 hours. Well, on Friday, his Twitter account was down again. And this time, this was not a drill. Twitter says his account is permanently suspended. This story gets even bigger because it's not just Twitter. In fact, entire technology ecosystems are now prohibiting Donald Trump from posting directly to their sites. Let's go to Will Sommer, who covers technology at the Daily Beast. Will, this kind of snowballed. Can you just walk me through what companies are done with the president?
Sure. I mean, so yeah, as you said, this escalated really, really quickly. Twitter on Friday night banned the president. Facebook has followed suit and banned him. Companies have cracked down on him. Twitter specifically highlighted some tweets the president had sent. They said they didn't like that he, you know, kind of praised the protesters.
We love you. You're very special.
They said that by announcing that he wouldn't go to the inauguration, they felt that that was opening it up to be a target by saying, like, wink, wink, I'm not going to be at the inauguration. I don't think that's the most solid argument in the world. But I do think that, you know, the president clearly did use Twitter to promote the riot, or, you know, what became the riot. He specifically said it would be wild in advance. And so they called literally the protest the wild protest. So he was really egging people on. And if you're Twitter, you know, or any of these social media companies, you're saying, hey, maybe I don't want to be the platform for organizing a riot. But additionally, I think also at play here is the fact that a lot of these companies, there's a real peer pressure effect. So when Twitter acts, we've seen this in the past with other far-right figures where Twitter will act or Facebook will act, and suddenly companies like Apple or Twitter, who are kind of like, they don't want to be holding the bag and answering, why are you the one who hasn't banned him? And so often there can be kind of this domino effect.
Is there a difference, though, when the person you're talking about is the sitting president of the United States? Like, no one is arguing that he's not the rightfully elected president. commander-in-chief of the country, right? Like, he has the power to really influence our lives, even if you don't like it. Shouldn't we know what he's saying?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's generally pretty concerning to see that a handful of companies run by billionaires are able to sort of kick someone off the internet and sort of kick them off of the public discourse pretty strongly.
This argument from the ACLU, quote, this is their senior legislative counsel, Kate Wayne. She says, we understand the desire to permanently suspend him now, but it should concern everyone when companies like Facebook and Twitter wield the unchecked power to remove people from platforms that become indispensable for the speech of billions.
And certainly, obviously, Trump has his own outlets. You know, he can put out a press release or he can hold a press conference. But I think for the average person, and I think it's concerning. At the same time, you know, I can certainly appreciate that that when it comes to literally people dying at the Capitol, you know, the companies felt that they had to step in.
Yeah, and let's talk about Trump's potential outlets, because the question clearly cannot be, are people ever going to hear what Donald Trump has to say again, right? Like, they'll hear him. It's just a question of where, I imagine, and how many people will hear him. Is the answer to that something like, you know, Parler, like one of these sites that's much more geared around, you know, free speech, even if someone considers that speech dangerous?
Sure. So there are a couple of these social networks like Parler or Gab that have sort of sprung up as Twitter has banned conservative figures and kind of far right activists. And that they're sort of like, we're the site that won't censor you or won't moderate your comments.
Parler is increasingly popular with conservatives and allows users to see some graphic material, including violence and conspiracy theories.
But these sites have some challenges of their own, which is both Parler and Gab were long courting Trump. I mean, they saw it correctly as, you know, if Trump left Twitter for them, it would be huge for their business. But at the same time, any company that's doing social media is going to run into a challenge, which is it's not just your company, even if you build your own servers or whatever. All of these companies exist in a whole tech ecosystem. So they're using credit card companies for payment processing. They're using cloud servers that are, you know, potentially run by Amazon or other companies. They're using domain hosting that's run by GoDaddy or another company like that. And so it's sort of like, once there starts being a run on your site and once, you know, someone pulls their services, then, you know, this happened to Gab. And so you essentially, you can sort of get erased from the internet or, you know, have to constantly be moving around.
Oh, so like GoDaddy says, like, we have a problem with President Trump, and that affects a company like Parler.
Exactly. And so this is the exact issue Parler is facing right now. So over the weekend, Google pulled Parler from the App Store, and then Apple pulled Parler from the App Store. And now Amazon says as of Sunday, they're going to pull essentially it's Parler uses Amazon's cloud server application. So Parler will lose its servers. And so right now, Parler is having between Apple and Amazon and Google is really having its technical support pulled out from under it.
Well, and we can talk about kind of theoretically whether the president should be treated differently than others. I guess I'm also wondering, because I called you a technology correspondent. You're somebody who really studies disinformation. You are somebody who is tapped into the QAnon scene, who's been following these dark corners of the internet for years. So as someone who's watched this unfolding for all this time, deplatforming, canceling someone from using their account, does that work? Or do people just always find a new megaphone?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of debates we had about deplatforming, but certainly from the perspective of, I think, someone who wants a saner democracy, perhaps, or people who are critical of these far right figures, I mean, it's very effective at marginalizing them. You know, think of characters like Alex Jones at InfoWars, Milo Yiannopoulos, Laura Loomer. These are people who got their attention by using social media, and it was a very low cost way to do it because you could just send a really rude tweet. But when you're kicked off, then you have to kind of resort to these increasingly kind of ridiculous tactics to get attention, and then you kind of become an increasingly marginal figure. I think the tech community has a lot to think about and answer for, and I think you know, no president in the past had such a connection with their audience via Twitter. But at the same time, I think the ability of right-wing groups to use social media has really, frankly, demented some people.
They've developed a lot of excuses as to why Q's predictions always fail.
You know, QAnon conspiracy theorists were all over the Capitol on Wednesday. They were breaking into the buildings. I talked to so many people who just have totally ruined their lives with conspiracy theories.
Donald Trump, I need a miracle or something. Somebody, QAnon, help me.
But it does, I do think banning Trump represents kind of a moment for these social media networks.
And it's not even necessarily President Trump. We're also seeing companies distance themselves from members of Congress who supported this notion that votes in certain states were invalid. Will Sommer from The Daily Beast, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Even after the invasion of the Capitol ended, there were lots of questions still lingering, including, will any of these people be brought to justice? Well, on that front, at least, we are starting to get some answers. Let's get into it with ABC's chief investigative reporter, Josh Margolin. And Josh, frankly, it seems shocking that as of Wednesday evening, there were like a few dozen arrests. It seems like there are plenty more of them now.
Oh, absolutely, Brad. And in fact, there were so many shocking things that day. But one of the most shocking kinds of images that we saw of people just walking out of the Capitol, unstopped by law enforcement. They could have actually been under the impression that, hey, this whole thing is done and I'm free to go.
Let's go get a beer.
But the truth is that once the depth of the crisis and what had occurred had become clear to the American public and to investigative agencies and prosecutors.
We have members of the Metropolitan Police Department that are scouring the area hotels, businesses, etc., trying to identify some of these individuals.
The people who had managed to get out of the Capitol, to get back onto buses or planes or into cars and to get home, that they were not going to be safe from the grasp of law enforcement for very long.
Trump!
The rioters that got into the Capitol, a lot of them showed incredible stupidity.
We're going in.
They were on social media. They were recording themselves.
West Virginia State Delegate Derek Evans also charged.
I'm not going anywhere.
A complaint alleges he posted that video online, showing him entering the Capitol.
They were openly boasting about what they had done.
Richard Barnett of Arkansas putting his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk and then making off with an envelope with her letterhead.
I didn't steal it. I put a quarter on her desk, even though she ain't worth it.
With respect to this investigation with Richard Barnett, at approximately 10 a.m. this morning, we took him into custody.
Then the investigation, in all seriousness, goes into very complex and high-tech type of methods. We're talking about the ability for law enforcement to look at cell phone data. And it's not even cell phones that were necessarily being used if you were calling home or calling somebody else. You know, they were looking at like pinging of cell phones. Plus, Brad, there's something else that's important about this investigation. In the run-up to the rally and then the riot at the Capitol, a lot of people were posting what they wanted to do. They wanted to act out violently. They were bringing weapons.
Here's a man apparently wearing a ski mask, and you see a bunch of zip ties, which can be used as handcuffs. Were some of these thugs planning to take members of Congress or the vice president hostage?
What they'll do in law enforcement, what they're already doing, is they go back to those social media posts. They see who was posting about zip ties. Then they see people saying, I'm going to bring zip ties. Then you try to back in and you figure out who was where. Can we identify somebody that was seen openly carrying zip ties?
And we've just learned of two new arrests. Law enforcement officials say Eric Gavilek Munchell of Tennessee and this man, Larry Rendell Brock of Texas, both seen with zip ties inside the Senate chamber.
We're talking about a crime scene that was, yes, large, but also probably one of the most photographed crime scenes in the history of crime.
Well, and I should say, and meanwhile, people surrounding President Trump have said they had nothing to do with some of these gatherings. But now we are starting to see the names of some current and former Trump campaign officials on the planning documents, the actual protest filings that you have to make saying here's who's going to set up the stage, that you did have Trump associates on these listings. But then looking forward, Josh, I mean, we're still 10 days away from what is usually the biggest security thing in Washington, the inauguration of a new president. And Joe Biden has told people to stay home. We know that they're not planning on a lot of people. But could you go even further? We've seen the mayor of Washington, D.C. essentially ask the federal government, hey, can you just not allow anyone in the streets near the mall that day? Would we do that on the inauguration day of a new president?
Look, our reporting is very, very clear. The Biden administration, the incoming Biden administration, the Biden transition, they were concerned about security at this inauguration for all of the obvious reasons. And what happened on January 6th just reinforces their concerns.
I have great confidence in the Secret Service. I have great confidence in their ability to make sure that the inauguration goes off safely.
There are already warnings that people are looking to come to Washington in the days leading up to the inauguration, possibly on Inauguration Day, with weapons to commit more acts of violence.
A lot of these far right groups are very animated right now, very angry about the fatal shooting of the woman who illegally entered the Capitol. And some of these far right groups, including white supremacists and a loosely knit association known as the Boogaloo, have been hoping for a race or civil war.
We know for sure they're reinforcing the National Guard presence. They're talking about whether or not the guardsmen who are going to be brought in are going to be able to be armed during the inaugural events to make sure that they're able to repel any type of violence that might come in. We know they're going to bring in more police presence. If you said to me that, okay, the decision has been made, they want to tell the public not to come out, there will be no vantage points, the public will not be welcome, I would be somewhat surprised by the extreme measure that would be, but I would not be shocked given the security situation and the legitimate fears. The American public has a right to expect that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be inaugurated that day, they will be safe, that government can function in an atmosphere where there is not a risk of injury or physical violence.
Yeah, and Josh Margolin and his team have actually put together a documentary on what we've seen unfold here. It's called 24 Hours, Assault on the Capitol. It's an ABC News special, and it will premiere tonight exclusively on Hulu. Josh Margolin, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Brett.
And one last thing. You want to talk about an actual close election? Well, look no farther than Dickinson, Texas. The Houston suburb had its mayoral election in November, which then went to a runoff. Well, after the votes from that were tallied and retallied, the candidates were tied.
Can't make it up. Cannot make it up.
How often does something like this happen? I mean, it's really been unique.
So, rather than riling up supporters, both candidates did what the law told them to do. They showed up late last week for a random drawing.
Just kind of anxious to have it resolved, I think, one way or the other.
We've worked hard. You know, Sean and I both worked hard.
In Texas, if your town does not have a tiebreaker written into the law, you're supposed to draw lots, which is kind of vague. So the city council got to decide how to pick a winner. Someone apparently suggested arm wrestling. That did not happen. They eventually decided to have the candidates each write their name on a ping pong ball and drop them into a top hat.
And I just want to show everybody the hat is empty.
The Capitol riot was barely 24 hours old, so everyone was determined for this to be friendly, respectful. Both candidates smiled, they shook hands. The person picking was the mayor of the neighboring town of, I'm not making this up, Friendswood.
John Skipworth!
And Sean Skipworth's name was pulled.
I'm kind of numb, but I'm glad it ended like this.
He will be the new mayor. His rival, Jennifer Lawrence, was the first to say congratulations. No, not that Jennifer Lawrence. By the way, the exact vote totals were 1,010 to 1,010, which adds up to, yes, 2020, the year that will haunt us forever. If you get a chance, write us a rating and review on Apple Podcast. It is very much appreciated. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.